All right, guys, this is actually a very special pod. It is a new format that we are trialing. Basically, I sat down with Perry and Eric. So Perry is the third owner of Unemployable, our British citizen that is joining us. And we sat down and talked about our take on the Tommy Robinson interview, our most successful interview to date by a mile. And we talked about how it affected us, some of the behind the scenes things that you may not know about that podcast, and also the risks that we take in real terms by deciding to sort of wade into these very emotive, dangerous waters, which they really are. And I share some of the realities of that that we are experiencing as content creators. We went into a really deep chat about where Australia is at, what we fear, and why we think this is actually happening. And we share some pretty compelling data that really will make you probably sit up in your seat and go, holy shit, what do I do here? Do I sit silent? Do I stick my head in the sand? Do I turn off social media? Or do I fight? And I got to tell you, it's sort of unresolved even in me at this point, because the cost of speaking up is indeed high. With that said, I hope you enjoy this podcast. Please let us know, particularly on this one, in the comments, what you think. Because if you like it, we'll continue this kind of format on the occasion when we have a pod that really strikes a chord and really gets some significant traction. Also, remember, the number one thing you can do is hit that subscribe button, because that button is the one that gives us greater access in the world to bring more influential, interesting people to you and get the unique Australian take, which is what Unemployable is trying to do. We see all these famous people out there in the YouTube world, but we don't have somebody who's asking it from an Aussie point of view and through that Aussie lens, and we want to be that person. And the way to help us be that person is to hit the subscribe button. But that's it. Thank you so much for being here. We really do appreciate you as a watcher, even if you disagree with us. Let's get into it. So before we get too far into this one, I want to introduce all the listeners and viewers to a new face on the pod for many people. This person is Perry Bentley. Perry, welcome to the show. How are you doing, mate?
So what's going on, guys? How's everyone doing?
So Perry is the third owner of Unemployable. He is the guy in the background that makes it all happen. He's not usually on camera, but we've brought him on for this special episode for reasons that will become evident as we go along. Principally, he's a Brit originally. And this format today is going to be something new for the pod that we're going to try. And based on your reactions below, your comments, your feedback, how well the video does, how many new subs we might get out of it, we might continue this format. So if you like it, let us know in the comments and engage. So Perry, why don't you frame it up and kick it off and tell us, like, the idea. This was your idea. We love the idea, but what is the idea of this format and what are we going to get into today?
So to preface, this is nothing new in regards to what other people are doing on podcasts. It's just something that I knew that we as individuals, it's probably worth us having more than one communication on big podcasts that we've done. Now, recently we had the Tommy Robinson pod, which as anyone who saw that knows, hit a nerve. So the issue that we've been having in the UK at the moment has really come to light on quite a few things. And I thought, well, yeah, what, doing an interview is one thing. Talking about the issues that are happening is one thing. But, you know, after you've just sat down and listened to that sort of content, sometimes it's good to take a rest and then come back and actually, you know, after you've filtered it through, you go, hey, maybe we need to have another conversation. How did that actually make you feel? How did the conversation that we had with Tommy put your mind? Has it changed a few views that you have? And really have a discussion on this, because I know that we all have views on how we felt about that. But, you know, coming off the end of it, I was furious. I was angry. I was like in a very kind of, you know, specific mindset. But I've had time to sit down and kind of go, okay, what do I actually feel? And where do I see the future of the UK, Australia, etc.?
I think for context for people, you know, we've done a few hundred pods now, I think, up that we've done since we started doing this. And this one is going to be our most watched, most shared, most viral podcast that we've done. Prior to that, it was Pauline Hanson, who, interestingly, was also talking on issues that are quite sensitive, things race-related, immigration-related. It's definitely sort of a lightning rod subject. But to put it in perspective, I think the Pauline Hanson pod on YouTube is up to around 300,000, a little bit below, is it? 270? Yep. And the Tommy Robinson pod is, you know, 80% of the way there in 2 weeks or 3 weeks or something. And the Pauline Hanson pod's been up for 9 months or somewhere like that. So it's definitely going to surpass the Pauline pod and become our most viewed, most engaged piece of content. So where do you want to kick this off? I mean, I might just give you my quick take and then Eric will throw to you to get the ball rolling. So for those who haven't watched the pod, please watch it. It was very, very hard to watch. It was super confronting. And I was actually the one who did the interview and I just sat there. I think, honestly, I spoke maybe 10 sentences in that whole hour or something with Tommy. And when I hit stop on the tape with him, I first of all checked, did that record, because it has been a long time since I've been deeply and authentically moved by a message. And I couldn't quite put my finger on how I felt. I did a quick post on socials afterwards from my kitchen here. And I said, guys, I'm actually a bit shaken right at the moment by just what happened over the last hour and what I heard from this guy. And I was quite disturbed for a few days just thinking about, you know, what's unfolding there and how it's just profoundly evil, right? Like no matter which way you cut it, it's profoundly evil that there are these radicals within any segment of our society, whether it's a religious segment or a racial segment, just any segment, doesn't matter. And to be clear, I think there's evil people across the board, across all religions. But yeah, I was just shaken at first. And then I started to really think about what was going on and think about that level of corruption. And I'd already watched the documentary Silenced. And if you haven't watched the documentary Silenced by Tommy Robinson, I watched it in preparation for the interview. It really was a seminal moment for me. It really started to wake me up to deception of mainstream media when Tommy literally caught them on camera taking payments to stay quiet, like school teachers in the UK being paid by the media to not talk about what's actually happening in the school and around one particular subject, just to see that level of corruption. And when he talked about if you are not fully clued into how powerful the word racist is, it silenced an entire police force in the British country and allowed the systemic rape of our children. That is really hard hitting. And he said that it was in the fear of being called racist. Policemen and women didn't want to be called racist. People don't want to be called racist. They don't want to talk about this issue. And then, of course, the saying, evil prevails when good people do nothing. And if they are afraid of being labeled racist or whatever, they will do nothing. And I started to then think about, obviously, Australia is just really a settlement of the English. My parents were English. They came over to Australia as immigrants on the boats after the war. We share a lot of DNA in our country with the Brits.
Sorry, didn't see you there. While you're here, actually, we've got a new coaching cohort that just opened up for the Unemployable Property Coaching Program that you get taught on how to become a property developer. One-on-one coaching, bi-monthly coaching, and also events where we get a full coach bus with all the students and go to 6-7 different development sites. When I say development sites, from one lot to 10 lots to 50 lots, you get to see exactly why we buy it, how we buy it, how we fund it, and also how you can do it yourself. The next day, we had an amazing event at the QT Hotel here on the Gold Coast where we had all of our consultants come in and teach everybody on what they're looking for with sites, what are the different trends, and how you can become a property developer yourself. Now you see me on the video, but who you're gonna be getting coached by is Shannon and Carson. Who's Shannon and Carson? 4 years ago, Carson was cleaning carpets. Shannon was a machine operator. Today, they're doing over $100 million worth of land deals. I know you're listening, and I know you want to take action. And if that's you, click on the link below or go to www.unemployableproperty.com.au and register your interest, and one of our team will reach out to you, and we'll see you on the next bus. Now get out of here.
And if there's one country in the world that is closely aligned to England, I think Australia would have to be number one or maybe number two. And you're Canadian, Eric. Maybe you want to talk about it as a Canadian, also a Commonwealth country. And I was deeply concerned. I just want to add one more thing here before I throw to you, Eric. You know, I saw a report that has come out of, in Denmark. So Denmark is now pushing back really hard against immigration. And this report revealed out at the Denmark government that they studied immigrants from bad places. Just from different cultures. So 321 stateless Palestinians were granted asylum in 1992 and tracked through to 2019 to see how these stateless Palestinian immigrants did when they were welcomed into a Western European country. Of the 321 people that were admitted in 1992, 204 of them are convicted felons today, 71 have been jailed, and 176 of them are on welfare. So basically half of them are on welfare, 71 are in jail, and two-thirds have been convicted of crimes. The second generation from those 321 immigrants, 990 children from those original ones. 337 of those 990 children are convicted felons, 132 are in jail, and 372, a third of them, are on welfare today. And so this really starts to get to this issue when you're here in Australia of, you know, 1,544 immigrants a day being flown in on planes from around the world. And Australians are rightly concerned. And if you want to talk about it, you get labelled racist, which has happened to me, and the knock-on effects are just profound for a nation. And from the very small sector, and the worst is what Tommy talked about, but there's also huge cultural problems that come with it. Eric?
To get the number straight, there's been 235,000 views. There's been 100 views since we started this pod, funny enough. And 56,700 watch hours in that time. And it's only been up for a couple of weeks. So it'll definitely be probably our biggest pod. Now, before this, I'll be honest with you, there's so much information out there. I didn't really know who Tommy Robinson was. I've heard his name before, but didn't pay much attention in the past around who he is, what he does, what he stands for, until I think it was Perry or Adam that came up with the idea of saying, hey, why don't we get Tommy Robinson on? And one of the reasons is because he was on Patrick Bet David, which obviously we look up to as a podcast and as a business person. And we thought, you know what? Shit, let's try and get him on. And that's when Adam did the interview. I watched it, obviously, back. My wife watched it back. And it's actually hard to believe, to be honest with you. Like, it's still hard to comprehend the things that are actually happening and how much he exposes in these types of interviews. Because I watched the PBD interview as well. And I've got kids, you know. I think anyone, I know Adam, girls. Obviously, Perry. Yeah, you guys don't have kids yet. No. And in my opinion, it hits a nerve a little bit differently, I think, too, because, you know, I mean, all you want to do is protect your kids. And again, I'm sure it's hard because he does label, obviously, one religion, right? And it's a very sensitive topic for me, even. Like, I've seen the Instagram reels that our team had made, and we actually put one up.
Yeah.
And I actually rang Perry and I said, take it down, because I think it was just too much. Like,
without context.
People without context, right? If you're listening to something for an hour, hour and a half, or you're watching a video for an hour, and you're committed and you're seeing it and you're getting drip fed the content, it's a little bit different. And like you said, you've got the context. But when you get it in a 30 to 60 second clip, it was heavy, to the point where I actually reviewed the other five clips that our team, put together. And I couldn't even accept to have any of them up.
yeah, that was a big debate, wasn't it, Eric? Like, for us, freedom of speech.
Yeah.
It was very hard, which
it was so hard, right? Because at the end of the day, this is the problem, right? It is a very, very touchy subject, right? We all have friends that have listened to it, that look at it probably a little bit differently than us. You can see the comments just keep rolling in. I was actually quite surprised of the comments, to be honest with you. I thought there was going to be a lot more negative comments, but there's a lot more positive comments. People saying that, Tommy Robinson is a patriot and, we should be proud. And I just look at someone like Tommy Robinson and go, the easy thing to do is not talk about it. The easy thing to do is just turn a blind eye and live your life and do your thing. And I'm like, this guy obviously has some deep conviction in regards to why he does what he does. And there's not many people to do that. And I take my hat off to anyone that has a conviction and belief to put themselves out there, right? Like he has, to go through the torment, right, that he has gone through. Family breakups and the judgment and, all over the news being portrayed as, a villain, really, even though he sits there, and accepts that he was a hooligan back in England and he did get up to mischief and he did the wrong things. But in this scenario and around these topics on the podcast, he's just like, he will not give up. Like, the guy will die, preaching what he has seen and is educating the entire world. And I don't think it's probably just held with one religion or one race. This is happening all over the world.
Yeah.
And it is a major, major problem. And it's very uncomfortable to talk about. I'm still very uncomfortable, even talking about it now. And I take my hat off to Adam for actually doing the interview, because I know that he probably would have ruffled a fair few feathers being the guy that actually interviewed Tommy Robinson.
So just on that note, and I think it's because, and this is a really important thing, is the reason why I think people are starting to say that Tommy Robinson is a patriot and fighting for the good cause, because people are now sick and tired. They've got label fatigue. Everyone is sick and tired of being called. The very second that you think one thing differently from the consensus, you're now a racist. You're now a far right extremist, and it's getting tiring now. No one cares about it, to the point, because we are now in a position where our children and our children's children are being put into positions where they're being groomed, they're being attacked. And, there's only so much people can take before they get sick and tired of this. And it kind of pushes more onto the side of the authoritarianism that has been kind of pushed out in the UK. The issue that people have at the moment is that if you don't believe what the left or whatever they're saying, then you're a fascist, you're a racist, believe in what we believe, which is weird, because it's basically become liberal fascism, which I think is a very interesting direction, where the progressive left have now become the fascists, but they're just doing it in a much more kind and sweet way, by saying, hey, if you don't go by our bands and our things that we're doing to make the world a better place, then you're against the consensus, which is really weird how things have kind of changed in that route.
Perry, it's 100%, and I want to double click on Eric what you said about the courage that it takes to do this, to be Tommy. That's another level. Like I don't think people really understand what he has given. Like, he's lost his marriage. There's plenty of parts of the world the guy can't go. He's constantly under physical threat. He's constantly under threat from the government. And I can tell you, this journey into just my little foray into deciding to speak up, and I still battle with it every day, because there is a real price. There's a reason that celebrities and big business people and stuff don't talk about politics or any of this stuff, because the price is real and it's not free, right? That's what happens. And celebrities, you know, I'm not a celebrity, but there are real celebrities out there that you know, there's a real price. And I want to just, like, I'll tell you a couple of things that I'm actually genuinely concerned about, just at a personal level for me, which will just demonstrate how real these problems are and why free speech is so important. So this is a clip. I'm just going to play a little bit of it, right? This is a clip from a court in the UK of a judge handing down a sentence to a man who posted something on social media. I want you to hear this, because this is not fake. This is real. This is happening right now in the UK. Just listen to this clip, and I'm just going to hold it up to the camera so you can see it and just get your head around this, and I want to expand on it.
You went on to say that you did not want your money going to immigrants who, quote, our kids and get priority, end quote. This offence is so serious that an immediate custodial sentence is unavoidable. Would you stand, please? The sentence that I pass has been reduced by one third to reflect your guilty plea. The sentence is one of 20 months imprisonment. You went on to say that you did not want your money going to immigrants who, quote, our kids.
So this guy put up a quote, put up something on social media, a comment saying, I don't want my money as a UK tax government going to immigrants who rape our kids. Now, that got him 20 months in jail in the UK for a comment. Now, Perry and I are about to fly to London. I'm a British citizen and I have a British passport, and I have a social media account with a Tommy Robinson interview on it and plenty of other, you know, commentary. I actually am concerned about flying in there in 2 weeks' time and what might be waiting for me. You know, am I going to get arrested, or, you know, have I commented somewhere? I haven't said anything like that, but this is real.
Where's the barrier? That's the question, right? Is where's the barrier, and where at what point will they move the barrier to a point where, Adam, you are now within that, and you are now going to be in prison? Because it's like what you're saying. People arrested for Facebook pods deemed hate speech now, right? So,
and I want to go to Dubai later this year, and that's, you know, I like going to the Middle East. I like calls to prayer, and I've got nothing against the everyday Muslim person, but that view might not be taken by a sweep of my social media, where I'm standing up for Australians' right to, you know, like, block having loudspeakers on mosques in Australian suburbs. I, you know, like, that can be taken as racist or whatever else. So my freedom of movement is very, very tentative, right? When you start moving into this space, plus you get the risk of people cancelling contracts or whatever else I've got going in my life on the basis that, you know, they perceive you to be racist. And it's a very real thing. It's very, very costly and risky to go down this path. But the opposite is stay silent, keep everybody on side, and the world goes to hell in a handbasket.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was actually very surprised that the video stayed up. Like, before it went up, we were 50-50 in regards to, you know, whether YouTube was actually going to keep it up or not. And I was actually quite surprised it still is up. and still going, still getting plenty of views. And I had a fair few people, you know, commenting me about it. And even they were, you know, they never heard about it before. Like Tommy Robinson, they never heard about Tommy Robinson before either. And then they're like, how is this, you know, how is this stuff actually happening? And this is the thing, like, how is this happening in the world that we're living in? It boggles my mind that we are so advanced as human beings. We're so advanced with technology, yet these things are still happening in our society. That's what boggles my mind, that how people can actually think they can do these things. Because I'm so far from that. And it's so, like,
I think when you double click and go down that rabbit hole, that's actually a really worthwhile question when you go beyond the surface of the question. So the surface of the question is, how can it happen? And you say, well, you know, there are bad people. But if you actually dig a bit deeper and go, no, literally, how can that actually happen? Like, what needs to be in place in society for this level of depravity or this level of affront that Tommy talked about, where you have people literally recruiting terrorists on British soil in front of a British war memorial to fight a jihad against British soldiers? How does that happen? And it happens when you can neutralize an entire police force and legal system. That's what happens. And political power. And that's what I'm concerned about with Australia, is that, and I don't believe that's by accident now. I believe that this is some very clever people that have got a lot of Australians. Like, when you see lesbians and gay people for Palestine marching on the Sydney Harbour Bridge, that is like seeing KFC march with chickens in it.
They don't know what they're talking about.
Like chickens for KFC, because if they were in those countries under the terrible rule,
they'd be stoned.
They'd be thrown off roofs and murdered. But yeah. What actually happens in people's brains to miss that? How are they supporting that? And so, Eric, it's a very, very good question. Like, what actually has to break down in a society, and what are the mechanisms to subvertly overtake a nation like that of good people, otherwise good people? Because Australians are fundamentally good people. So are British. They're fundamentally good people. So how did that happen? That's actually a fucking good question.
How did it happen? Go ahead, Barry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, there's always been as British, you know, being British and having that British culture has always been something we've stood by as a cultural, you know, benefit throughout. And to pull on that, you were asking regarding, like, how can we get to a point where you've got, you know, communities within it which are allowed to systematically, you know, do these awful, awful things. There's a documentary, I believe, that recently came out, or it might have come out before, called, I believe it's The Dancing Boys of Afghanistan. And again, you know, this is not trying to paint Muslims in any way, but it's again just showing that there are these areas where they call them the Bakabazi. And what it is a practice in Afghanistan where they exploit and enslave adolescent boys, sometimes more normally for sexual gratification. And this is in these countries where the wife is not, what she says does not go. So you're dealing with these men who exploit this, and this is something that happens. Again, I don't know how much, but it's something which is a real life situation that happens in Afghanistan. And so the likeliness of this happening in other cultures which have similar issues, well, it's likely that if you see it in one place, you might see it again in other places.
I think the issue too is, guys, is everyone starts to be getting painted with the same brush, right? And it's hard to segregate, right? Who are the good people? Who are the bad people? Like, I know, like, coming into Australia from Canada, right? Being an immigrant to Australia, and my parents are Portuguese, right? So they're immigrants to Canada. And they're not called WOGs there. They're called WAPs, that stand for without papers, right? That's what it stands for. And that's what they were called growing up, right? My dad used to tell me stories of him getting bullied like crazy, going back to your country. We don't need you here. Mm. You know, getting spat on and all these types of things. And Australia, when I can't, like, Australia, in my opinion, is a very, very racist country. Like, I don't know if you guys realize that or not, but in my opinion, they're very strong in what they believe. But what happens is not everyone is.
No.
Right. But if you were to ask my wife, she'd say the same thing. She wouldn't say the same thing about Canada. Right. But because we immigrated here and you can see it in the comments, right? Even me, when I'm talking on the podcast, I'm the only one non-Australian on the pod, right? Yeah, I get you yank, go back to your country. You're not even Aussie anyways. I had to actually Google in ChatGPT what a SEPO meant, because that's come up a fair few times. And I'm like, right? Yeah. And I'm kind of like, this is the reality. You got people on the other side of the keyboard that actually think this, right? But I know that every Australian doesn't feel that way, right? But the issue is, it's very easy, if you don't have an open mind, to paint the brush over every single Australian to say, hey, everyone is racist, or every Muslim person is a bad person, or every Christian is a bad person, whatever you believe in, you know? And I think that's where you can't draw a line in the sand. And that's the issue, right? It's like when COVID first happened, I'll be honest with you, when COVID first happened, right? And they showed the videos, right? Of the Chinese lady eating the bat. I don't know if you guys remember this, when they said it came from the bat, it came from the markets. Like, there was videos on mainstream media saying that's how it got out through the bat and in the markets, right? In the wet markets.
In the wet markets.
I can't believe this actually happened, right? I started going, like, there was reports going, you know, only Chinese people can get it. Like, these are the reports that were happening. Like, I remember seeing these reports, man. We're laughing about it now. But I was walking around and I was starting to judge. Yeah. I was starting to go like, oh, let me cross the street. Don't want to be near that person. They might have it. You know what I mean? Like, you start painting everyone with the same brush. And I think that's the issue. And that's where the labeling comes from. And then that's where the racism really starts to run rampant. And it's that's where the issue is, in my opinion, as well. There's multiple issues, but
I see them in flaw, yeah.
It's hard to distinguish.
I think that's a really good point on that. The only thing, the other side of that is that if you look back in history, you have, let's say, 80% of the population of or a culture is moderate, calm, nice, friendly, right? Want to just get on with the world. But you have a 20% which are extremists, and this could be extremists. You can use Nazis, for instance, right? They were 15, 20% of Germany. The rest of Germany wants to get on with their world. However, the extremists, because they are a large proportion still, are able to then move through without any much pushback. And it's, again, this is not saying in any way on the Islam or anything like that, but when you've got 80% of Islamic people who want to just have peace, but you have 20% which are extreme, because they still run by the same religion, they are going to allow it to happen without much pushback. And again, I'm not saying this is everyone, but we've seen it in history before. You don't need a large proportion of people to cause a mass issue.
I think Eric, just double clicking on what you were talking about there about Australians being racist. I think a way to reframe this, and what I've been thinking about this a lot, are Australians racist? Are British people racist? Who's racist? Like, what is it? I think most Australians are actually nationalistic. And what I mean by that is, and I think everybody in most countries is or should be nationalistic. And what I don't know if that's the right word. I'm just bringing it up now. Maybe that means something else. But to me, what nationalistic means is you're proud of what you perceive to be Australian culture. And like British people love their pies, they love their beers, they love their football, they love to have a laugh, they love the crap food to take the piss, you know. And Canadians are ridiculously polite and kind and nice. And, you know, so that's Canadians, right? And then you got Australians, which are fucking larrikins and convicts, and, you know, like, that's the modern Australia, right? That and we value being able to go down the beach and our budgie smugglers, you know, rogues, you know, that's kind of Australian culture. And like, I think most Australians would welcome people from anywhere. As and another Australian culture is we work hard. We show up, we work hard. Our soldiers are respected as some of the best soldiers in the world. Like, American soldiers will tell you this, that when Australians go and go to war with them, they're like, the Aussies are the hardest fucking guys and girls you've ever seen in your life. They're well-trained, they're hardworking. That culture is what we are proud of. When we see statistics of people who come into this country that, you know, like, I put up the stats from the UK of the average Muslim immigrant into the UK. I put it onto my social media, and it's like 78% of female immigrants don't work at all and live on benefits and get free accommodation. 63% of all Muslim immigrants don't work and get free accommodation. And they have 6 to 8 children. And so, you know, those are facts, right? And that those facts are not reflective of what we perceive to be our culture and the way we do things where we're from. I think most Australians are very happy to see, like, I think of Lena in Sydney, who is someone in our community, one of our clients. She came to Australia as a Muslim immigrant. She did it the right way and the hard way. And then she started a business. She's active in her Muslim community saying, look, we've got to get to work here. We shouldn't be on the benefits, guys. We need to be contributing. And she's integrated, and she waves the Aussie flag and she has Australian values. Now, don't get me wrong, we argue in DMs, but I respect the shit out of her as well, because she's strong and she's smart and she creates jobs, and she's you know, Palestinian hardware with a lot of Aussie software in there. And so I think most Australians don't care. Like, we give shit to the Indians, but if the Indians are working and contributing and they're integrating and they're nice people, and they say, g'day, mate, when you walk into the 7-Eleven, I know you're going to laugh Love and it. Say I'm racist, but it's true. Most 7-Elevens are operated by Indians around the country, right? Like, and we love them for it. You know, like, we've got to be able to bring back that. There's a difference between being racist and wanting people to integrate with your culture, because if we let that go, we're going to have this world that becomes gray and not a world colorful and vibrant.
I definitely agree with you. But when we're Portuguese background, we've got tan skin, we've got olive skin, right? Sorry, Perry.
Sorry, why?
Anyway, when my, you know, 8-year-old daughter comes home from school and my 9-year-old daughter comes home from school, and they say, and this was happening at school, and we had to go to school, right? And these are 8-9-year-old kids going, she goes, Dad, I've been getting called a cotton picker. What does that mean? This isn't school. 8-9-year-old kids. I got called another racial slur. What does that mean? They don't know what it means. But let me tell you, the person that's saying it knows what it means. But where are they hearing it? Mm-hmm. Right, like that's deep stuff, man. That's happening right now in school.
But Eric, you know? But it's not isolated to your kids, right? Like,
no.
When I got up, I wasn't called white boy, but I was called Bucky, and I was called, you know, because I had these massive teeth and I used to have a massive gap between people, didn't know whether to smile back or kick a field goal. Like, kids zero in on whatever it is. If you've got an American accent, they're going to murder you. If you've got a gap in your teeth, they're going to murder you. They're going to murder you for anything. Yeah. And I think these days, like, there's plenty of Aussie kids that, like, are getting teased to buggery because they're a ranger. Like, where's the ranger support group? Where's the ranger march? Right? Like, climb the fuck up, princess. Like, it's Australian to fucking take the kids. And you're Australian. Like, people might joke about it, but when people get to know you, do you really feel that Aussies that know you are racist? They'll call you a fucking Seppo. I've got gay friends. They say, what's up, Puffy?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
they love it because they know that I don't give a fuck.
That's the key. You don't give a shit. The problem most don't, but then there's a fair few that actually do. And those are the, like, to me, it's like, I embrace everyone, white, black, Indian, Chinese, whatever it is, right? Like, to me, it doesn't matter. To me, all people are equal. And I've been raised that way, and I'm raising my kids the exact same way. But unfortunately, you know, that whole thing of why can't we all just get along, in my opinion, will never happen. No. It hasn't happened in the past. And in my opinion, it will never happen in the future. Even the robots are going to take the piss out of each other. Right. Mm. That's just the reality of humans.
And I was just gonna say, like, if you extend this argument forward though, at what point does the teacher step in and defend? Like, I love your kids. Like, don't get me wrong. This isn't about your kids.
No, of course.
Right? Like, so I'm just saying, at what point does a teacher step in and say, hang on, you can't say that. But what about Bucktooth Adam at the back? Or Ranga Sally at the front with freckles. And they're like, well, hang on, you're stepping in to defend these Canadians. What about at the end of the day, this is where people have to think deeply about these arguments and decide where in on the line of free speech do they fall? Because I just played you a clip of a bloke who's probably sitting there at home watching the cricket going, I don't want these fucking immigrants to have my money. They're all rapists. Now, that's terrible, and it's racist to say they're all rapists, whatever he said, right? Mm. But you tell me that you haven't got somebody in your family that would have said that, right? Mm. Of course, they're just sitting there having a beer. And yes, it's horrible, but the world has horrible people in it. But it's not the police's job to come around and start adjudicating and putting our racist Uncle Sam in the fucking clink for things he put on social media. But you know, so we've got to really think, I think, really think deeply about what I think Australia, all countries should really like think about what are their values. And like when you look at countries that seem to be working, like when you go to Dubai, you have a sense that if you fuck around in Dubai and piss on their people and start taking the piss out of their religion, like those fucking idiots who sat there in, did you see this? They're sitting in a cafe and they're filming people. You know, in the hijab, in the burqa, you go, look at these, you know, R2-D2 robots or whatever.
Someone clip that. Sure, clip what Adam just said there for a short, by the way.
So within like an hour, they were arrested and thrown in jail. You're like, you want to come to Dubai and take the piss out of our people and what they believe? Straight to jail. And I'm like, okay, well, that's because they got a strong sense of what it is there and what they respect. Whereas Australia's gone the other way, which is like, we just accept everything and everybody, and then it just becomes a nothing place. And you need, like, Japan is a great example, even though you can say Japan's failing as a country and all of that. But Japan is one of the few places that I go to in the world, and I get off the plane, I'm like, holy shit, I'm on another planet here. And I absolutely love the joint because they preserved what Japan is, you know? Mm.
That's what I love about going to Europe, right? Like going to Italy, there's something about going to the cafe, right? Mm. Sitting down, right? And the 80-year-old beside you literally blowing smoke in your face.
That's awesome.
There's freedom about that. Like, I don't give a shit. I can do what I want. Then I'm going to hop on my Vespa and cruise around, and I'm going to speed, and no one gives a shit. And there isn't a camera on every corner that's watching you. Like, I love that. Like in Dubai as an example, like you would be scared shitless to go there and do the wrong thing. Why do you think they're calling it one of the safest, if not the safest country in the world? Why? Because they put the fucking fear of God into you, right? To know you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do this, because if you do, it isn't a slap on the wrist, right? And that's the thing here, is just slap on the wrist after slap on the wrist after slap on the wrist in the Western world. Like I just think of all these very, very bad crimes that people make, and then next thing you know, you hear that they're out in 5 years and 10 years, and then they're back into the public. I'm like, how does that actually, where is the incentive to not do it? The incentive is like, okay, well, I'll just go and do it again and get a slap on the wrist.
Yeah, if they go in jail at all.
It's the problem is everything's by a case by case basis now, right? That's the issue with what you're seeing. And, you know, the difference between, let's say, Dubai, where in aspect it's more totalitarian, that there is one rule, one system, one place, one focus. And because of that, that works. But, you know, in the UK, there's so many different, you know, everyone can see the story a different way, or you can, it's a different year. So now the change is, it's a very odd place. But the problem I have with the UK is that, and I mentioned it earlier, is that this progressiveness has now turned into its own form of fascism, where if you don't listen to what we say, you're against it and you're a racist and bigot. And now that's how they're controlling people with these labels.
100%. I mean, look, the other things that I see, like two more examples that I find, you know, like really alarming, like Chris Minns, the Premier of New South Wales, just announced they're spending $1 million on an Islamophobe hotline. So yes, if you see people that are saying things that they perceive to be Islamophobic, you can call and get free counselling, manned and paid for by the New South Wales state taxpayer, and you can report things like me and this place for talking about this shit. And the question here is why? What like to Eric's question earlier, how does a country get disarmed? How does a country allow this slow creep into things? And it's this kind of stuff. Like in the UK, Tom Bilyeu put up a post last week on his YouTube channel where police in the UK have gone, female officers are wearing really tight, you know, workout gear with like crop tops and stuff, and riding slowly through the streets with an undercover cop behind them, trying to elicit any guy that looks at them wrong or whatever, and they're jumping out and arresting them. like where does this sort of start? And to me, it's like, you know, Islamic beliefs are very, women have to cover up. So now in the UK, we've got police arresting people for looking at women riding on bikes. You know, like it's a very, very slippery slope. And, you know, like I saw this stand-up comedian. Comedians are often like the canaries in the coal mine. And this woman got up and she's like a middle-aged woman. And she said, "What the fuck is with all this woke shit? Now I don't get any catcalls from the builders. That was the only action I was getting." And she goes, "Plus it fucked up my whole business plan because I was sleeping my way to the top." Well, that's fucking done. It's like, and the moment we can't laugh at this shit is the moment we've lost what it is to be Australian. And I think to be a person, and I'm actually really proud that Australians are I reckon the best. Andy Shumlow said it. He said Australians, when they're at the best, are probably the most liked people on the planet because they take the piss. They know how to laugh. They know how to, like, women take the piss out of men and vice versa. But all that's being lost in the name of political correctness and protecting everybody, right? Like, we're not fucking children. We're not babies. We're able to reason, and we want, like, you know, like Mark says, who's on our pod, I don't want my daughter protected from criticism. I want her to learn to deal with criticism, because looking back, all the greatest people in the world, I dealt with, like, I had really bad teeth. People always talk about my teeth. I said, "You saw my teeth as a kid and what I dealt with, because I had a proper issue with my teeth. I had stains all over them and gaps and broken, and it was the bane of my existence. And I still have issues and sensitivity from a child, because even my own dad teased me in front of his mates to get a laugh out of them at my expense, right? Like, but that's made me who I am, and I like who I am. Like, it's made me resilient. It made me develop a personality, because I knew that the first target was my teeth. So I better, whatever comes out of that mouth better be funny or good or articulate, because I'm going to have to talk my way out of a fight." Right? Like, that's just life. That's how it is. Man, but when we get governments in protecting everybody, we turn into a fucking weak nation and a shit show.
I think we have to, one big thing is, we need to stick up for one another. You know, that is a big thing, and stand with each other, right? Yeah. For whatever you believe in. I want to give you an example, a personal example. My eldest daughter 2 weeks ago got suspended from school for 2 days. Right?
Really? And
got suspended for 2 days. Really? Yeah, and there was a couple of reasons why, but I think they kind of, you know, went a little bit harder than what they should have when we had the meeting and had all that stuff. And then, but basically what happened is a kid ratted her out, right? Doing something, right? And kind of threw her under the bus. Anyways, the next day, right? V's at home. Her younger sister, right, is in the bus with the same kid on the bus. He's 13. My daughter's 4 years younger. Okay. She gets out of the bus first. She waits outside the bus, crosses her arms, lifts up her one leg, right, against the bus, and she's sitting there waiting. This kid comes out of the bus. And she goes, "Hey," and says his name. And he goes, "Yeah." She goes, "You got my sister suspended, hey." He says something and she goes, "Sleep with one eye open."
How you go, girl?
That's funny.
Don't we get a call from the school going, "Hey, just so you know, right, this is what happened today." So Jen's telling me this when I get home, and Genevieve's there with a little smirk, and I gave her a fist pump. I'm like,
"Yeah,
you
go,
girl. You stand up for your sister. That's
this is
right.
What I'm talking right? about, Eric. Right? That's parenting.
Right? That's parenting. That's sticking up for your rights. That's helping a mate. That's what we need to be okay with. You know what I mean? Like, it's okay to agree to disagree."
Watch all the lefties light up in the comments here, Eric. You're promoting violence. You fucking terrible father.
But again, like you have a 13-year-old kid that's ratting out a 9-year-old kid because obviously he went to go tell the teacher. And this is the thing. Like in real life, you don't have that person to go to. You got to deal with it with yourself, right? And it's okay to have these constructive conversations. Like it's uncomfortable, but it's okay. Like I've got
send her back to school with an extra dress for him. Say, look, I just thought you might want to wear
this to school. Back to the Tommy Robinson pod, right? I was very uncomfortable, guys. Like I really was. I've got a lot of good friends that are Muslim. You know, I had a friend that passed away not long ago, and he was Muslim. And I went to my first Muslim funeral, which was quite an experience, right? Mm-hmm. And they're amazing people. Like honestly, like they are just, they're like us. They just have their beliefs. We have our beliefs, and that's fine. And that's why it's so hard to talk about these topics, right? Because you feel like, again, you know, everyone is just being put in the same basket, but it's not.
It's not
right?
That.
And how do you distinguish it? That's the thing, right? How do you distinguish the difference between the extremist and the non-extremist of the things that are actually happening that Tommy's talking about? And I think that's where a big part of the problem is, right? So even with me saying, you know, I think Australians, you know, is a fairly racist country compared to Canada as an example. Why do I think that, right? Because of some of the experience and some of the things that I've heard and been said and the rest of it. But to be honest with you, is it said in Canada? Yeah, probably it is too. But I just don't notice it as much because I fit in there more because I sound like a Yank. I sound Canadian there. I'm not different. You know what I mean? Here, I'm a little bit different. You know how it starts? Hey, where are you from in America? Actually, I'm from Canada. Oh, so sorry. Sorry to insult you. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like they think like Canadians hate Americans, right? Like, and this is the thing. We all have these stigma around certain nationalities and certain areas around the world. And I'm like
you learn to adapt. Like you learn to adapt, you know, and like humor is a good way to do it. Like I talked to Lena and I said to her, how do you cope with it? Like you wear a hijab and like, she goes, I just laugh it off and crack a joke. And as soon as they do, many Aussies go, oh, okay, she's all right. Like, you know, like, You got to learn coping mechanisms. Again, there are really bad racists that really, really, really are racist. But I think like in the Family Guy, they had that one clip where they broke into song and they said, everyone's a little bit racist. You know, like Asians are racist against Asians, right? Like, you know, you're married to a Korean.
The Japanese hate the Koreans. The Koreans hate the Japanese. The Chinese. Everyone hates the Chinese. It's just how they are. But it's over years and years of yeah. But when you get the individuals, no problem, no issue. Exactly. Right?
Yeah. And a little bit of effort on wherever, if you're an immigrant anywhere, just learning some of the language and learning to laugh and find out a few, like when you see a good comedian visiting a foreign country, they do their due diligence and they learn to crack a joke and fit in. But I think that's what people want everywhere, is they just want whoever's going to come to their country.
Respect the culture.
Respect the culture, you know, don't try to, you know, overtake their government, right? Like, let the government do what they do. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. We need to be on guard because governments really are gatekeepers to our culture. And I think there's nothing wrong with saying, you know, we want people in power as part of our government to understand a set of values that this is our country. And without that, it just gets frittered away. And this is what Pauline Hanson said, is that multiculturalism doesn't work. And at first on the surface, you go, oh, she's racist, right? But actually think about it for a minute. Like, do you want a world where wherever you go, it's just the same picture. It's just this same, you know, it's just representative of, you know, the spread of the population equally in every country. No, I actually don't want to live in that world. I don't want to go to India and see a whole bunch of Aussies. Like, I avoid parts of Bali because I don't want to see so many fucking Australians, right? Like, yeah. I don't, because that's not why I went there. You know, I want to go to India and I want to get Indian belly and I want to smell the spices on the street and I want that rich cultural experience.
What makes us human?
Yeah, well, that's what's so amazing about it. You know, like, if that all goes away and we don't have that diversity, then we don't have an interesting planet. You know, it's just dead, you know.
I think that the question is then is the big why, because everyone's always asking, why are the governments doing this? Why is it that they allow these things to happen? Why is it that there's a two-tier system? Why, is it good for Adam but not good for Mark, etc.? And my view is, and, you know, I'd love to get your guys' views on it, I think it is the fleetingness of political power. And so, like anything, they're trying to keep the power as long as they can. And so the best way to keep it is to bring in new immigrants or new types of individuals who can basically vote and keep you in power, knowing that the people that are already here are sick and tired of your shit, really, to not say it any more eloquently.
Yeah, I mean, that. Yeah, I mean, that you're going to light up the comments with that one, because everybody's is going to say, it's a controlled demolition of the West. It is a controlled decline. They are not stupid. They know exactly what they're doing. That's a whole, what they call a conspiracy theory. And of course, the conspiracy theorists are usually just forecasters now. They're actually, in some cases, forecasters are just telling us what we don't already know, except mainstream. but if you look at, like, you know, the number of votes, I mean, at the end of the day, this is a post I saw this morning on 2GB in Sydney, right? And it says, more immigrants equals extra votes. And here's the data. The Indian-born population in Australia has exploded. The majority are the major win for Albanese, because leading polls to say 85% of them vote for Labor. And, yeah, so at the end of the day, if you want to hang on to power at all costs, including Australians' culture and Australian way of life and all of that, it's just sick to think about that you would cash that in to stay an extra 4 years or whatever it is in power. And people don't understand that the current rate of immigration, you're talking about 1.3 million extra people in Australia in the next 36 months. Think about that for a second. There is no possible way. That is the size of Adelaide. You need to build infrastructure. You need to build an entire Adelaide, all the plumbing, all the power, everything. Is that going to happen, yes or no? The answer is fucking no, it's not going to happen. They're not even building enough houses. So what does that mean? It means they're going to be living in bedrooms that already exist. They're going to be filling up roads that haven't been built, so they're going to be on the same level of roads. The stress on the current infrastructure is just going to be multiplied. And that this isn't new. This is actually, the Australian population has doubled since the year 2000. So we're seeing enormous stresses being put on our infrastructure. And that means, you know, all sorts of problems when the job growth isn't there and all the rest. Of course, it's going to result in crime. It's, of course, when you see those numbers I put at the top of the pod with those Palestinian, stateless Palestinians that went into the UK, on one hand, it's easy to say, okay, yes, it's because, you know, they're bad people. But also imagine being a Palestinian stateless person landing in Denmark and having to find a way. Like, you know, like, of course, like, they're not going to have the job opportunities waiting for them. It's going to be a foreign country. And what they've come through, like Francis Ngannou, the heavyweight UFC fighter, I've listened to his podcast and how he was people smuggled out of Nigeria or Africa there and through and up into Paris and was sleeping in a car park and ended up going into the gym and offered to clean the buckets out and hit a bag. And the guy said, can you fight? He said, not yet, but I'll learn, and went on to be the UFC fighter. But he tells this story of how many people die on the way out of the country and then what it's actually like to turn up as an immigrant. Of course, like when I landed in Paris not long ago, I got out of the airport and I did not see a white person when we hit the city for a good 30 minutes in the taxi in Paris. And these are people living on the street, selling shoes on sheets that are out. They don't have the opportunity. And so we know this is a fact. It's not just that they're bad people. They're not. Most of them are not. But it's not solving the problem, going somewhere where they can't survive. So, of course, it results in crime and problems. Mm. And but it's racist to talk about it. It's just like, you racist, you don't want people coming into Australia. It's like, dude, like, you know.
It's a business, though. That's the other thing, is that these people have been sold a dream. They've been sold a dream that by coming to France, by coming to Italy, by coming to England, by coming to Germany, you will have a better life. And with England, you know, because of our benefit systems, there is some truth in that. But the issue is that you now have the smugglers who are making a huge amount of money, who are actually funded by NGOs, right, who are basically saying, hey, we'll give you money to make sure that you can get these people over because you're giving them humanitarian rights to be able to live a good life. But all that's happening is you're moving one problem, to another place, and it's the same issue. You know, the infrastructure's not there. We can barely manage the people that we have homeless issues and housing issues in the UK, and yet we're now farming in people just for the vote.
Exactly. And you see the data that came out of Australia this week. I put it up on my Instagram. You know, we've seen 1 in 3 or 1 in 5 6-year-old boys in Australia on the NDIS. We've seen it grow from $1 billion to $50 billion a year in 14 years. So, like, who's paying for that? It's the people who are now actually the minority in Australia, the people who don't rely. So, well, of course, okay, we saw in the Fin Review, more than 50% of the Australian voting population now rely on the government as a principal, government or government assistance as their principal source of income. So the other 50%, the producers, right, outside of the government handouts and jobs that they have, they're paying for this. And then you see the talk fest in Canberra this week. What's on the table? Capital gains tax on your own house. What else is on the table? Death inheritance tax is now back on the table. It's all over the press in Australia right now. What's unrealized superannuation? You know, there's a wealth tax that they're talking about where, oh, we're only going to charge the top 2%. So there's all this cash grab. What do you think is going to happen?
You know who's not paying for it? You.
Yeah, but even that, I get criticized.
But the thing is, right, I'm saying that a couple of reasons. One is in the comments, right, this week or last week, there's a real me talking about this Australian influencer family that left Australia because they were sick of, you know, how many negative comments there were in there? Oh, I stopped when you said the word influencer. Oh, you know, they're shocking people. They should stay and fight for their country. That, like, this is the thing. This is what you're up against. You're up against these people that live under under this invisible line, that in this victim mentality going, and that's the same thing with you, Adam, right? Like, instead of embracing it and going, you know what, well done, you made the choice, you were fed up, and now you're living a life on your terms, right? And I'm like, I started thinking to myself going, and my wife last week, right? This is the conversation around the kitchen. What are we waiting for? This is her talking to me. What are we waiting for? Like, we don't have to be here. Mm. Like, this is someone that Australia was the place to be for her. She knew she was going to live here. She had a calling to come here. The reason why we're here is because of her, right? She finished her school. And now she's like, we could be anywhere in the world. Why are we, like, we just keep getting, you know, this, because she's listening, right? She's listening to the pause. She's listening to the, what's happening. Like, and this is my wife telling me this stuff.
And right? Before people jump in the comments and go piss off then, Seppo, if this Seppo leaves, you know what leaves with him? He's paid millions of dollars in tax. He has created, I don't know, God knows how much you've paid in stamp duties, transfer duties, PAYG salaries. You got 170 employees there on the Gold Coast, all paying PAYG. Then you pay company tax on $100 million a year company that you founded, and that's not the only one you founded. So what I'm saying here, guys, you're pissed off, whatever. Who the fuck do you think is paying the bills? Who do you think is paying for NDIS? Who do you think is paying for your fucking four-day work week? Who do you think is paying for all this shit? It is the small business owner who comes here with a dream and wants to contribute and create jobs and all that sort of stuff. And they come, like Eric's one. I spoke to a Muslim guy. I was going to interview him this week. He's only 21 years old, and he's in my audience. And he said, I'd love to be interviewed about my views in Australia. I came as an immigrant. I am a Muslim. I'm a devout Muslim. I went to Mecca and everything.
Great.
And I said, look, I would love to interview, but I pulled it. And the reason I pulled it is because I said, mate, if you were my son, I wouldn't want you to experience what I know is going to come. And I said, are you sure that you want us to put our entire spotlight on you? Because it's going to be mixed. Let's just say that. And I wanted to talk to him because he's such a nice young man, and he's respectful, and he's driven, and he goes to every conference that comes here, and he's hungry as fuck. And he lived under a single mum in the Sunshine Coast who took him in and raised him. I said, just give it a little bit more time. I just want to see a little bit more rubber under the wheels. But these are the guys we've got to put a spotlight on, because they are the right types of people coming into the country. Like you, Eric, the reason I put the spotlight on the grandmother is because, look, she's a sweet lady, I'm sure. And of course, everybody wants a grandmother to have a home. But when we've got a housing crisis and we've got a country going to shit, we want to bring in people like old mate that I just mentioned, or you 10 years ago, that can come in and actually work hard, create jobs, be respectful of the culture, and still do, you know, go to prayer and be a Muslim. That's great, but a Muslim that has Australian software, right? And so on. Like Eric, you're fucking Canadian with Australian software.
I'm a Portuguese Canadian with Australian software, so I'm very very confused. I know.
Get out.
No, it
is alarming.
You know what? That's why. Yeah, but you know what? I would love to hear from different types of people. You know what I mean? Like, we're not one angle here, guys, with unemployable, right? We want to hear all different types of people's angles, right? So if you are a Muslim out there living in Australia, and you've done business and you're doing things and you want to get your word out, or from any type of nationality or race, you know, like, again, like Adam said, happy to get different views in different angles, because there's always two sides to a story, and then the truth in the middle somewhere, right? And the truth that we've just heard, right, which is hard to deny when you can see it for yourself, right, in the videos and the rest of it that he's captured, is hard to see that, and it's hard to say that that's the truth, like that is actually happening. So I would love to hear different angles and different people, and you know where they've come from. Like, this is like some of my friends that are so tenacious and determined and successful have come from war-torn countries, because they're just like, you have no idea, mate, right? Like, you guys have no idea. You've been kissed on the tip of the nose, right? Okay. Right. I'm being politically correct, right? Right. To be born in Canada. You know, I was looking at bombs sitting on my roof of my house as a kid, looking at bombs, you know, like these types of things. Like, and this is the thing, we don't know what we don't know. And that's why I have so much respect for people that come from somewhere totally different to try and make a life. Because let me tell you, from experience, it is not easy, man. It is not easy. And I'd love to hear from more of them.
Yeah, we built this podcast to educate and be educated. Yeah. And the type of people, we want more stories, more information, just to show that, again, we're not looking at one lens. You know, it's something us three have probably talked about more than anything recently as well, is just trying to make sure that we're getting more than one picture. But like anything, you know, we follow facts. We follow data. We look at data and facts first, because if you see things which don't make sense, we want to call them out. And that's on both sides. Yeah.
So guys, I think this is, I don't know, we'll see how people react in the comments to see if it's a go or we should do more or less of this. But Perry and I are going to be joining Tommy in a couple of weeks in London on the Freedom March, the biggest street demonstration in Europe's history, we believe. So we're going to be on the streets reporting for Unemployable. So that should be fun. And just get a vibe and actually be there, boots on ground, and see what we see. And we'll report back for Australians to assess what they want to assess based on real footage coming from us, who are not bribed or paid for by the media. Mm. We just run our little YouTube account at the pleasure of the overlords.
I can't wait to. I just got like a vision of like Anderson Cooper, you know, like Perry. Just here we are live. We're at the bridge and it's raining. And
no, it's coming. I might bust this one out, guys. I'll do the Andrew Tate Aussie version. We're on here for the States.
that's a strong look. For
those of you on Spotify, I just took my cap off with my shaved head, my cigar, and some sunnies, and I just did a neck tattoo, and we're all set there. All. But no, it's going to be fun, guys. We'll report from the streets of London. We'll let you know what's going on over there through the way we see it. It'll be interesting. And thanks for watching, guys. Please let us know in the comments if you enjoy this. The most important thing you can do for the pod, if you are enjoying this content and you do want to sort of fight for a better, more diverse world, and if our model of that fits with you and you like what you're hearing, of course we have our position. If you're welcome to disagree, but if you do agree and you want to help it grow, tell a friend and make sure you subscribe, because the more subscribers we have, the more chance we have of getting people on. Like Perry and I are going to be meeting some pretty awesome people in London, and if we have 1 million followers on our channel, they're going to want to be on it. And that just comes down to that little red button. You've got to hit the subscribe. It just gives us greater access to bring you better people and have the Aussie take on this stuff. With that said, thanks for watching. We'll see you on the next one. Bye for now.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.